Welcome back, folks, to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. Today's show is brought to you by Keystone Technologies. Go to KeystoneTech.com, Greg at KeystoneTech.com.
That's right. You're looking for retrofit product. They got fixtures, they got light bulbs, they've got kits, anything you need for LED retrofits, Keystone's got it for you.
So go to KeystoneT. Whoa. Go to KeystoneTech.com, baby. That's KeystoneTech.com. And of course, the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. We're at the booth here at Light Fair 2019. And our guest today is a scientist from SORA. His name is Aurelien. What's your last name? Aurelien David?
Last name David, first name Aurelien, yeah.
Aurelien, are you from France?
I am from France.
Okay, well, welcome to America.
Thank you. I'm a citizen, so, you know.
How are you? Okay.
Yeah.
So welcome to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah. We want to know a little bit more. So there's been information creeping out about this blue light.
Yeah.
And there was an article from the Health Ministry of France, basically, that came out that everyone's been reading on Yahoo.
Oh, yeah.
That they're showing poor health outcomes related to the blue lights of LED.
Yahoo, our favorite source of news, right? I mean, perfect. Yeah.
So what is actually going on with the blue light and why is it bad for humans?
So we are jumping down the rabbit hole immediately, right?
Yeah,
it's a very busy, confusing topic, right? So we can go through it a little one step at a time. There are a number of different concerns relating light and health. And I think part of the difficulty is that there's a lot of confusion. People talk about different effects and they mix them together and there's a big lack of clarity as to what issue they're really talking about. So I'm going to list a few of them and then we can discuss them separately if you want.
Well, I think one of the, just listening to what you're saying there, there's a sense that right now in the lighting business that we can make healthy lighting systems. I think it's more important to make systems that don't hurt anybody first.
Right, to the extent that we're hurting people, and I think that's what the medical world is trying to understand, is what are really the risks, and then what are the opportunities, right? Sure. So there are different layers of concern. One is light and sleep, and we can talk about that one at will, right? And then there are concerns about blue light hurting us in different ways, right? So short-term and long-term damage from the eyes to the eyes from excessive amounts of blue radiation. And these are very different phenomena, right? The story about light and sleep is completely distinct from the one about damage from blue light to the retina. Okay. And even that one should be split in short-term versus long-term.
What do you consider long-term at this point? Have we had it around enough to have long-term effects?
So long-term is maybe the easiest one to talk about. Long-term retinal damage, you know, it's essentially years and decades. And sure enough, sunlight over decades is bad for you, right? And you know that people who live in the mountains tend to become blind or have retinal problems. And so it is a fact that UV, violet, blue, short wavelength light at very high dose over decades is bad for you. That said, I think that concern is something that is very separate from indoor lighting just because of the difference in light levels, right? Outdoor lighting, sunlight, 100,000 lux. Typical indoor lighting, a couple hundred lux. So we're talking about a factor of 1,000 of difference, right? And so there is really, that I know of, no reason whatsoever to think that indoor lighting in general, LED or not, can cause any long-term damage. Now, there's two ways to read what I just said, right? You can say, well, there's no reason, we don't know that it's bad, so we're fine. Or some people are a lot more cautious and they say, we don't know whether it's bad or good, and so we should be worried about it. And I think in general, you know, the way, I mean, in France, people tend to go very much on the side of precaution. And so all these publications you see from French scientists and safety authorities take that stance that if we don't know, probably it's bad and we should be worried about it. So that was the long-term health effects, right?
And your stance, if we don't know, should we be worried about it?
Well, again, I mean, you know, okay, it's very hard to make any statement related to medical science because you say something that sounds reasonable and 10 years down the road, you discover that, in fact, you're wrong. So, you know, we're left guessing. Again, my take on it is because the light levels are so moderate, it's kind of hard to imagine that the same effects that are caused by sunlight are in fact a concern with indoor lighting.
Interesting. Because you said the factors by 1,000. for factors of 1,000 different
right.
looks.
Yeah.
It's interesting because, you know, you take a look at, you know, what's happening right now in the lighting business. So much change, right? People are now, like, we existed under, you know, halogen and incandescent lighting
right.
systems for a century, mm-hmm. basically.
Yep.
And then we found out that T12 fluorescence after about 30 years were causing problems mm-hmm. with the flicker.
Yep. Yeah. And that's fair. Yeah.
You know, after about 30 years, it took us to figure that out.
Yeah.
Now with LEDs, you know, the assumption that because we don't have any acute problems manifesting themselves right away, that there is no problems. I'm not sure that's a right way to look at it. But even the lighting systems themselves are changing from generation to generation.
Mm-hmm.
So with T12 fluorescence and T8 fluorescence, you had 20 or 30 years
yeah.
of the same thing.
Sure, and you don't have that with LEDs, right?
No.
So I would argue, though, that, you know, people are very worried about the blue peak in yes. an LED, right? So I think there's a general argument that, number one, a photon is a photon. And whether it was emitted, if you have a blue photon, whether it came from an LED or a fluorescent tube or an incandescent bulb, it's the same photon. And there is no, from that standpoint, there is no natural and artificial light in terms of damage, right? So if blue light is bad, it's bad, and it doesn't matter where it came from. And some people have a hard time with that concept, right? They think that if it comes from LEDs, it's worse. Now, there's a question of, is that peak per se a problem, right? To a large extent, the phenomena we're talking about, the biological phenomena that we're concerned with, tend to be broadband, meaning they don't tend to react to one very narrow frequency of light, okay? They have a response curve, which is usually several tens of nanometers, okay? And so what that means is, usually, whether you have one super sharp peak or something that's broader or something that's quite broad, what really matters is not necessarily the shape of the peak, but the total integrated amount of blue light. And so, following that general argument, the amount of blue light you get from an incandescent and a fluorescent and an LED for the same CCT are in fact quite similar, okay? You have about the same amount of blue light in a 2700K LED and incandescent, except that in one case it's pure blue, and in another case it's a bit more violet and cyan. But if you integrate it over a few tens of nanometers, there isn't that much difference. So that isn't to say that there is no risk, but I think the point I'm making is that to the extent that light is influencing our health, what is true with LEDs was probably true to a large extent from conventional light sources before that. And that takes us to light and sleep, right? Because much is said about how...
Same about circadian.
Circadian, yeah, right. And that one, I think, is a true effect. You know, there's very compelling science that shows...
So you're saying the blue light thing is not an issue?
It
might be, but we don't know for sure.
My best guess is that retinal degradation caused by blue light at the levels we get from, you know, indoor lighting, warm white, is not an issue. And so far as I know, you know, there are standards, blue light hazard, things like that. Every standard that's been published, if you run conventional lighting through that, the intensity, the brightness is just by far not high enough to be dangerous. Now again, right, it might be that one day we discover that things are different. But again, it might be that indoor lighting is harmful for the retina, but then I think it would be true both of incandescent and LED, which, you know, is possible. We've had 100 years of incandescent, and...
I think being a human is harmful for your being a human.
Yeah, breathing
like
and so on, right?
It's harmful. Driving your car wears it out, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And so to be fair, right, I mean, some people say, well, but with LEDs you have access to much higher CCTs, which give you a lot more blue. And that's true. I mean, it's rare, right? Especially in the US, we use a lot of warm white. Very few people blast 7,000 Kelvin indoors. And, you know, people warn against that. They say, hey, you should not use very high CCT. I think that's a perfectly reasonable piece of advice to give. But on the other hand, I think it's already...
Well, the sun's not blue.
Yeah, the sun is about 7,000 Kelvin, right? But it has a fair amount of blue again.
No, the sun's like 3,000 Kelvin. You look at the sun in the sky. It's not blue. It's yellow.
Yeah, the sun
is red in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Noon sky. It looks to me like when I look up, and I don't see a blue sun. Do you see a blue sun?
I see blue sky.
Yeah, so kicker, right? The sun is about 6,500 Kelvin. It goes from 500 to 700 through the day, and the sky itself is 12,000 Kelvin. And the sun looks yellow because the sky is blue. So it's a comparative effect, right? So it's relatively.
So again, the sun is 60.
The sun is not blue. I look at it every day.
Well, it's white, yellow. Right? I mean, if you look at light from the sun, it's white. It appears blue with. Because you looked at the sky next to it, but the temp.
Okay, you know, there was a guy, his name was Copernicus.
Yes, okay. He got in trouble.
Yeah. I think he was the one that went to the Pope and said, you know, dude, the Earth revolves around the sun.
Are you trying to tell me something here?
think about how crazy it is to say that. Like, if for us it's nothing, we believe it. But when you're like in 1500 and someone says to you that, the Earth revolves around the sun. That makes no sense to you. You see the sun revolving around the Earth every day. What you just said to me doesn't make any sense. Like when I hear it.
Yeah, I mean, look at the spectrum of sunlight and go check out the CCT, right? I know it looks yellow because the sky is blue around it. So.
But what if you have a gray sky? And this might be getting too out there, but. What if it's a cloudy day, there's no blue sky?
Then you can see the sun.
Dang it.
And then it looks pretty white. I mean, when you see it translucent through the clouds, it looks pretty white because everything is the same color. So anyway,
we're gonna believe him, man.
We've been talking about everything but circadian effects. Yes. And
where did you go to school?
I went to school first in France at an engineering school called École Polytechnique. And then part of my PhD was there and part was at UC Santa Barbara.
Okay.
With Suji Nakamura, Nobel Prize, inventor of the blue LED.
You gonna drop some more names or what?
That's the best I have. That's it. I played my card, you know. But so just to say that I've been, you know, in the LED business for about 15 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So. Do we not talk about light and sleep? Yeah, because that one, you know, I think there's zero doubt that the effect is real. There's good science that shows it. And kind of to transition from the argument I was making, light has been influencing our sleep cycle for the last 100 years and probably more, right? I mean, incandescent light keeps you awake. LED light is going to keep you awake, no doubt. Maybe a little bit more because it has a little bit more blue. But that's arguable. To first order, you know, sleep disruption happens overall from our environment, from screens, from indoor lighting, and so on. And I think it's not hard to just, you know, anecdotally convince yourself of that. You go camping, you go out in the wilderness, it's night at 6 p.m., and you're asleep at 8 or 9, right? I mean, you crash. And that's because you haven't had your dose of artificial light at night. So it's an easy experiment. So obviously, this, you know, study of the effect of blue light on the circadian cycle, it's exciting because it's seen as an opportunity. For instance, in the morning, it can wake you up, which, you know, is a good thing for people who are lacking enough exposure to sunlight. And so we hear the buzzword human-centric lighting.
Not allowed on my show.
Okay, perfect.
I hate that.
So, you know, my take on it is people use that, and really what they mean when they say the forbidden words is we're going to blast you with blue in the morning. Which is fine. I mean, I'm not saying it's a bad idea, right? It is sometimes useful to wake people up if they have a lack of blue light. The tricky thing is the converse, right? It's in the evening, in the last couple hours before sleep, where you may actually want to fall asleep, and you're still subjected to artificial light, and you can't really escape it. And so there have been some good studies that show that regular amounts of light, about 100 lux, a bit more, a bit less, from indoor lighting, the amount of light you get from your displays at night, you know, tablets and phones, do keep you awake.
You know what, when I hear people, you're gonna maybe like this one too. You know, when I hear people talk about, and like I've gone back and forth, I interviewed, you know, Adam Lillian from UL?
Name rings a bell, yeah.
He came out saying that they have discovered that you can positively impact people's circadian rhythms and introduce health benefits. And I think I believe him, okay, and so that there is data. And then we talked to Alice Yan, who's you know, when you hear people talk about climate change, okay, and they say, you know what we should do? We should fire ions up into the atmosphere.
Sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah, to reflect. I just think to myself, that's a really bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do that.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And when I hear about people, when you like a scientist say, you're basically going to blast people with blue light,
right?
You know, we on one hand we're telling people that blue light is bad for them.
Yeah.
Now you're gonna blast them with a wait. Which one is it here?
Well, so clearly, I mean, the blanket statement that bright is bad, that's obviously nonsense, right? We've evolved under sunlight, a ton of blue, 100,000 lux, so it cannot be true that overall blue light is bad. I mean, you know, so it's more nuanced.
Well, like, here's the thing. Should we be wearing sunscreen inside and sunglasses inside? Like, so, like there's these competing worlds. So you have people that say sunlight is bad for you, right? You have to wear sunglasses all the time and put sunscreen on your face.
Right, yeah. But,
and then he turns around, it's like, well, no, your eyes use the sun to create vitamin D and good things happen to you wearing the sun. Which one is it?
And it goes back to your point, right? Which is that everything is good and bad. It's a question of dose and so on, right? But again, there is a lot of room to play there because typical indoor lighting, again, 1,000 times less than direct sunlight. Yeah. And so there's a gray area where, sure, if you're under pure sunlight for 24 hours, you're going to get in trouble, you're going to get burned by the UV, and even the amounts of light are going to be too much, right? But there's so much, you know, there's this transition region where you can add blue light indoors without going to those levels. Mm. So there is a safe zone, right? And when I say blasting people, if all it means is doubling the amount of blue light, we're still, I think, way below, again, outdoor light levels, which we have evolved under. So,
where are you on the health effects argument? Do you think that in the near term future, Greg and I are going to be out in the field installing healthy lighting systems for people?
Excellent question. You know, I mean, that one is intriguing because a lot of companies have in fact been offering these color tunable systems for a while. And it's funny, I mean, you know, I don't have the answer, but a lot of people know about it. Everybody's heard about light and circadian. It's not spreading yet in the field that much, right? And I think the interesting question is why and what's going to trigger adoption. And so we can talk about it. Probably part of it is complexity. Because, you know, sure, you would like to have color tunable light in a school, but you don't have a lighting engineer to do the, you know, tuning of the light throughout the day and so on. So I'm guessing that customers are a bit conflicted as to it's seducing, but they don't know exactly how they're going to use it. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. I mean, logically, it should pick up. You know, I think we're at a point where lighting engineers can design products, tunable products, which are likely to be helpful. To prove it formally is going to be, you know, it's going to take a while. But yeah, people should be curious about it, and hopefully they start experimenting with it.
Now, we typically don't get a lot into specific companies' products, but given that your founder of Sora,
yes,
invented the LED,
yeah,
what are you guys doing with this blue eliminator? What do you
call it? Yeah, oh, thanks for asking, because I didn't want to spin our stuff, but I'm happy to.
But if you're interested me, right? In why getting rid of the blue and the LED.
Yeah, so again, right, what I was saying is, if you want to wake up people in the morning, you add blue, and that's, in a sense, easy to do, especially with conventional LED technology, which is a blue chip plus phosphorus. You just reshape the spectrum, add some blue, and that effect is easily achieved. The converse effect of removing blue light is essentially impossible with conventional LEDs, because you start from a blue peak, right? And so you cannot remove it completely. So lighting people are concerned about light at night. They want to remove blue to help you go to sleep. But the best they can do is to go to a lower and lower color temperature. And, you know, typical indoor lighting, 3000 Kelvin, 2700 Kelvin, what they do is they go to 2000 Kelvin or less, 1800. Very, very warm light. So if you go buy any sleep bulb today, you know, there's a bunch of Edison bulbs on the market, they're all going to be about 2000 Kelvin. And that means candlelight, it means extremely yellow orange. And, well, as a user, I think it's just not practical for domestic use. You know, you're not going to spend 2 or 3 hours at night under extremely yellow light, which gives you a weird color rendition. You don't know what you're doing. It's just too much. And so there is a problem. There's a need that's not met on the market, which is how do we give people light which doesn't have blue, if possible, but still is of good enough quality that they're going to actually accept that light. You know, they're going to sign up for it. And so that's what we're doing, essentially. We call it blue-free technology. And we play this interesting trick with the spectrum of light. Part of Sora's technology is we make very efficient violet LEDs. So violet is shorter than blue, but longer than UV. No UV, all right? And so the trick we play is we create this interesting spectrum of light. I don't have a picture with me, it's a shame, which has a complete spectral gap in the blue region, right? So there is no blue radiation. We have green, we have red, and we have violet. And by adding an appropriate amount of violet light, we balance out the color of the light. So we provide normal looking white light. You wouldn't know, you know, you're under one of these lights, it looks like 2700 Kelvin, it has good CRI, good color rendition, but it doesn't have any blue radiation. And we think that's interesting because we think it will address this need of giving zero blue at night, but still with normal quality of light that people are not going to mind.
Can you do other Kelvin temperatures other than 2700?
Yeah, it's interesting. The technology can be applied to any color temperature. So if you wanted to, you could go to cool white without blue. Why would you want to do that? Well, maybe you want to do it for your phone display, right? And we're thinking about this too. So a lot of phone companies today are providing night shift modes, right? Where you actually lower the CCT. So people who make phones and screens play the exact same trick as light bulb people do. They go to low CCT to try to cut down the blue peak. And we think that instead of doing that, you can replace blue with violet and completely circumvent the problem.
You know, I was talking to a guy the other day and he whispered in my ear and he said, blue light may be bad, but violet's worse.
Right.
How do we know?
So, okay, depends, right? It depends what you're concerned with.
Sure.
If you're concerned about sunlight and macular degeneration, violet is worse than blue.
Okay.
Again, we're talking very high light levels. And in that regime, shorter wavelength means higher energy photons and UV is even worse and so on. Now, for circadian lighting, there is pretty good science, right? People have a pretty good idea of the action spectrum,
okay.
Right? So which wavelengths of light wake you up? And it's again, it's that bell-shaped curve which peaks around 480 nanometers, so blue cyan, and it tapers down in the violet. So there are, in fact, you know, credible calculations provided, for instance, by the CIE and other entities that let you compute, you know, the melanopic lumen and so on, right? And with those, you can actually count how much this spectrum and that spectrum wake you up. And you can prove that a blue-free spectrum, pound for pound, is about 40% less disruptive than a regular spectrum at the same CCT. So as far as circadian is concerned, it's better. And you know, there's good science proving that it's better.
Do you know Dr. Jennifer Veach?
Yes.
So I interviewed her on the show. Mm-hmm. She came into the studio and I talked to her. And when Greg and I were talking to her, we kind of, like, what came out from what she was telling me is that we don't even really know what light is in a way. Like, we're kind of like fish finding out we're in the water. Like, we kind of swim in light in a way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I was reading a story to my daughter the other night before bed. And the story was about the tits, a family called the tits, and they're the stupidest people in town. So they built this house, yada, 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 but they didn't put any windows in the house.
Uh-huh.
So the father said to his kids, he said, okay, I want you guys to go outside with these bags and fill it up with light and bring it inside.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So the kids were running in and out of the outside and they're filling up light and they're like, wow, it's a lot brighter in here now, don't you think, kids? And then, they, you know, whatever. So, but they were like, you know, the kids were like, no, Dad, we need, these bags don't work if the light is slipping through the holes in the bags.
You need better bags, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
So, the long story is this, is like, there's a sense in which we are creatures of the light.
Mm-hmm.
Like light is very spiritual.
Certainly, yeah.
To us.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You know, when there was, you know, let there be light.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and separating the light from the darkness is what God did in the beginning, right? In the beginning, there was nothing, right? So there's a spiritual aspect to light.
Spiritual, emotional, yes, yeah, for sure, yeah, yeah.
There's an emotional side to it. And when you start getting into it, there's an internal light, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, when you close your eyes, you can see light in a weird way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking really crazy here a little bit, but...
Yeah, you make sense.
You know?
So, yeah, I mean, you know...
How do you grapple with that as a scientist?
Well, as a scientist, I just take refuge in science, and I would say, you know, from a scientific standpoint, yeah, we understand light. But I get your point, which is that it's not all about equations, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's about emotion and how we perceive it.
Mm-hmm.
And there, yeah, I mean, it's a gray area, which is not all about science, and is about art and design, and that's why we have lighting designers and people like that, right, who don't only look at numbers but also understand the emotions triggered by light.
I mean, light is like when you talk about interior design, you're talking about lighting design.
Yeah,
like light is interior design in
and it's so underrated, right? I mean, how many interior designers really worry about lighting? Not many, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, lighting design, interior design,
yeah,
is lighting.
It's
design.
It should be the same, yeah.
It's
yeah,
one and the
I
same
agree.
Thing.
Yeah,
there's no difference.
I'm sold on that.
Yeah. So, you know, Greg and I we're at opposite ends of the business. I mean, you're a scientist working for a lighting company.
Mm-hmm.
That's about as far away from slinging light bulbs every day like Greg and I as you can get, you know? But when I think about it, when I meet a customer and they say to me, you know, what's the best Kelvin temperature? I say, the one you want.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
How do we grapple with that as an industry, that taste, the personal taste side?
Well, it's a tough one, right? I mean, there are so many ways to answer that, depending who you're talking to, right? Number one, there's the difficulty that the average user of lighting doesn't know anything, doesn't even know what crowd temperature really is.
Sure.
So that's, you know, a degree of complexity. But then I think there's a future big opportunity for lighting that caters more to our taste. And you see that, you know, even on more on the engineering front with these new color metrics that try to describe not only objective light quality, but subjective light quality, color preference, things like that, right? So it's an evolving field. I think there's a big hope in this industry that providing light that will make people feel better it's a very promising future. And that is a mix of health aspects, but also of well-being and, you know, personal taste, right? Yeah.
So what do you say to the people that say LEDs are harmful?
I'm not sure, you know. I mean,
I think you think they're alarmist.
I think, you know, some of the documents I've read are alarmist. And I will mention, right, a lot of people are guilty at their own level. There's a lot of news stories about, hey, blue light is terrible for you. This scientific study showed it. And then you go dig up the actual paper in the study, and it was done on poor albino rats with dilated pupils who were grilled under blue light. And yeah, of course, they became blind, right? Because you tortured the poor animals. And so the correlation between the albino rat and our eyes, very questionable. And there's a layer of obfuscation by, unfortunately, reports which are, you know, kind of drumming things up. So
it's like exposing someone to Chinese water torture and then claiming that, you know, water's bad for you.
That's a good,
you know what I
good
mean?
Analogy, right? So, okay, so but back to your question, right, at a high level. I'm going to make a broad statement, right? I think LED lighting is a blessing for mankind, right? Just because of the energy savings it's going to offer. And that is such a big deal, right? That's really going to save lives. And that's why people got Nobel Prizes for that, because it is so transformative. Whether there are second order effects, you know, whether there are concerns for our pupils, retina, maybe we should look at those. But to first order, it's going to be a benevolent technology. And that's going to be overwhelming. So some people are advocating, hey, let's stay with incandescent because infrared makes us feel good and so on. I mean, come on, you know. The benefits, the first order benefits are so overwhelming that, and sure, the health questions are worth asking and investigating, right?
You know, I love sitting around a fire.
Yeah.
Sometimes,
yeah.
Too. Actually, every once in a while. But I don't,
yeah, so do
I don't light my house and heat my house with fire.
Right. Exactly
you
the
know,
point.
I think some people forget about the societal benefits of energy efficiency. I mean, this industry is by far the best reducer of energy in the world.
Yeah.
There's nothing that comes close to lighting in the last 15, 20 years. I mean, even when we went from mercury in the lighting, even that is still worth it when you look at the mercury emissions from coal power to generating stations.
Yeah, absolutely. And so
LEDs, burning coal sends most of the mercury into our environment.
Yeah.
From coal, fired.
Yeah.
You know?
And the clean air we have today, I mean, we can thank it for all these technologies for sure.
You know, I mean, another thing too is that a lot of people, they've never been to a real natural resources extraction mine. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I haven't been, but I know what you mean, right?
You
yeah,
know,
and they,
it's like,
you don't get the
skin.
Yeah.
You've been to a coal mine, you know what I mean?
And put it in perspective. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people like, they've never been to an open pit coal mine in Hinton, Alberta, and
mm-hmm.
I have
mm-hmm.
watched them process coal.
Yeah.
You know, and or go to the tar sands in Alberta and watch them, like, just, it looks like Mordor.
Yeah, man, yeah, yeah.
From Lord of the Rings.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. These huge fires.
Yeah,
they're burning off, and they like
good old tar pits.
It looks like Mordor. I'm not kidding you. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, in Fort McMurray is probably, that area of Alberta might be the size of half of France.
Like, scary prospect. Yeah.
Like, you think about that area. Like, it's an enormous patch of the, it's the largest human construction site in the world.
You know, ever. I feel like I should go there sometime.
No, if you, yeah. Like, if you just took people to a mine or showed people natural resources extraction, what we're actually, what we act, like the size and the scope of it,
yeah,
their minds would be blown away, dude. Mm-hmm. You, if you showed them a coal-fired power plant, yeah, like what happens,
yeah,
in those places, how much coal they burn. It's crazy, dude. So the societal benefits of energy efficiency far outweigh the any of the side effects, you know? But, I mean, people love to sound alarms, man. They love to stir up trouble, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I think if you're somebody whose job it is to warn people about risks, your nature is not to say there is no risk, right? I mean, you're always going to want to say, please be cautious. So I kind of understand why there's this alarmist mentality, because these people are trying to keep us safe, right? It's their job. So it's a useful debate. But again, I'm not losing sleep over it at night, especially not with Sora Healthy.
So the sky has been falling since Chicken Little, bro.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I mean?
Yeah.
You know that story?
Nope. Go so for it.
The sky is falling. The sky is falling.
Uh-huh.
So Chicken Little gets convinced that the sky is falling.
Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I always tell people that, like, even, and I don't mean to start up a bit, whatever, but everything we have now with these devices, and even with the climate change. Now, I'm not a climate change denier, but I think global warming is also one of these things where people like to be extremely alarmist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I was at a lighting conference, and they had this polar bear, and they were showing this video of a polar bear, and the polar bear drowned at the end of it.
Yeah, that's cruel.
You know,
I've seen the videos, yeah.
And it's like, dude, there's so many polar bears in Northern Ontario. I know that they're there. I've seen them, okay? You know, we don't need to be so, we need practical solutions, and LEDs are part of those solutions. So I agree with you that we need people, we need to stop, you know, not everything is like a nuclear attack that's going to happen to us.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't. We can solve problems incrementally and slowly, and LEDs are participating in that. I have a theory about light, though. We talked a little bit about evolution, and I have this thing that, I know it sounds like I'm a light bulb slingering guy that doesn't know that much, but I feel like we're like fish in water with light, you know? And I feel like if you were to think about it like an aquarium,
mm-hmm,
right? So you may get some saltwater fish and make a saltwater aquarium, man, but it ain't the ocean. You understand what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There's something about natural light we don't understand yet. Like, why is it?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
If you knew how light really worked, we would be able to create electricity, all the electricity we need right away. Because all the energy we have is from light from the sun, right? In some way or another. All the fossil fuels, that's stored sunlight in a way.
In those, well, in a very, fuels. Very, very remote way, right? I mean, yes and no. It comes from other stars and so on. But anyway, so I'm trying to make sure I understand what you're saying, right?
Like, there's a mystery to light that's unsolved yet. That's what I'm saying.
So, again, right, I think I'm going to repeat myself from a scientific front. I personally don't think so. I think we understand light super well, right? What a photon is. But for sure, right? As far as light is perceived, there's no argument that when you're indoor, even under cool white light, you know for a fact that you're indoor, right? You know, people are not replicating outdoor ambiences indoor. That's an interesting open topic, how to make artificial light that really makes you feel like it's natural, you know? And that might not be necessarily, you know, a mystery that cannot be solved. I think it might have to do with subtle cues in the direction of light, the variation of color of light. You know, again, outdoor, you have the sky, which is a color, the sun, which is another. They cast shadows. The shadows have certain colors and so on. And none of these things are true indoor. I mean, indoor, shadows are black, right?
Yes.
So maybe there's a way to, you know, mimic enough of these cues that we could have natural indoor lighting that actually feels like we're outdoor?
I think you can't define perception. That's what it comes down to. Everybody's perception of light is different.
That's for sure true, right? Yeah.
No science. That's my thought.
All right.
Brilliant, David. Thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for getting my name right. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, saving it right. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I'm Canadian, so I do speak a little bit of French.
Oh, you got an edge there. Yeah, yeah.
A little bit edge, yeah. We'd like to thank Sora and is it Doctor? Doctor David?
Doctor, yeah.
Doctor David for coming on the show. And of course, Keystone Technologies. Go to KeystoneTech.com. That's KeystoneTech.com. And we're in the booth at Light Fair at the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Join us. Don't be afraid to get educated. Greg E. there. The Retrofit Kings again sponsored us, and we thank them. KeystoneTech.com.
Thank you.
Written on the rectory wall, there's a sign there for all. You are lost, the Lord is there to find you.